If you finish water, you need some more, we provide you, become comfortable. If you don't understand the question, you must request to be repeated so that you answer something which you understand. My first question would be around, it's a very simple one. I went through your CV, I've seen that you have served in many boards and authorities in the past and so on. Why do you think you are a suitable candidate for MDB?
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I served on both the IBA and Carter Council. I've never served on the MDBA, and MDBA certainly processed an initiative that way back early in the 2000s we were all very supportive of, especially given that we needed to diversify media in South Africa. Why I think I'm suitable is because I have a wealth of experience. I've worked in the policy and regulatory environment, the broadcasting, telecommunications, the ICT environment. I'm always committed to public interest. I have been for the last 16 years that I've spent in this industry. I've been in this environment and I've seen many ministers come and go and been through many different portfolio committees. If you think I'm a little bit too dated and too old, that's fine. But I do think that I still have a lot to share and contribute. I understand the need for intervention, and I think that with the way that we're going at the moment with the MDDA, whilst it is a very steady organisation, we're very proud of the fact that it's never been held before the Auditor General in terms of its audit report, it's always been clean, it's always worked very efficiently and effectively. I think it's time to turn the corner, it's time for review, it's time for monitoring and evaluation, and time for looking at the future and what we need to do to improve in terms of delivering opportunity for the most marginalized and disadvantaged people in our communities. My personal view is that we need to take stock and audit the successes that we have made and the gains that we've certainly managed to achieve over the last while since the implementation and creation of the MDA. I'm of the view that this industry generates a significant amount of revenues and profits, and I think that what is very concerning is that the MDDA is still honestly regarded as a voluntary contribution that many of our bigger players make, and whilst a lot of the contribution can be offset from the Universal Service Fund, so people will contribute directly to the MDDA, I think a more structured, streamlined approach that is properly regulated is required. I think that there is opportunity indeed to improve on the funding, on the programs and projects, on looking at sectoral input and support that's required, and obviously because I come from the area also of looking specifically at children's media. My master's was on policy development for children's television. I'm very concerned with the opportunities and access for children, for people with disabilities, for women, and sectors of our communities that still, let's face it, are regarded as being on the fringe, and I think that needs to be prioritized. So when I say review, I think it's always about looking at what we've achieved and looking at what we've strengthened and improved going forward.
Thank you, Chair. It's good to see you back again here before this committee, Nadia. What do you think are the most critical challenges that need to be tackled as a matter of agency in this particular sector? And if you are planning them, what do you think would be your particular contribution, personal contribution, if this committee selects you to be part of the MDDA?
Thank you very much, Reverend Rubin. I think that if there's one thing that I bring to the board would be the opportunity that I had working at the former Broadcasting Authority and the time spent doing public inquiries into, for example, local content, and the need to look specifically at South African content. And I think some of you will recall the resistance that was certainly imminent from kind of the commercial players, and eventually how we managed to just simply put through those regulations. And yes, they all accepted them. They all provided, at the time, 25% content in South African production. Of course, that has increased, and the regulator reviewed that. And I think that experience of knowing that often people will resist, but eventually will see the public interest merit in it as well. I think, for me, what, as I said before, is really the issue of funding, and I think that we've seen, certainly with yourself, which is a whole other entity, is a need to look at how we consolidate what's happening in this entire sector. We're talking about an industry that is rapidly developing. I don't want to even begin to think about what people are doing with online communications, with cell phone technologies, that this industry is in fact moving very quickly. And we need to, often as regulators, you can never play catch up. You always want to step behind the industry, innovation and development. And I think we need to start looking at that in a more holistic fashion. We need to look at what's happening in terms of the Universal Service Fund and the NDCA Fund. I would still pressurize that not to be a matter of the bigger players supporting the NDDA, but it's properly regulated in terms of every single entity that is that does have a license from CASA is properly committing to the NDDA. I think that my particular contribution would probably be located, as I said again, in communities that have never really been given an opportunity for real voice. I think that the one thing that we need to start considering very seriously is the issue of our media literacy and media education in schools. I can't impress more on that because we see what is happening and our children's inability to make, to understand the difference between an actor when they see them on the street as opposed to the individual and what they do. I also think that we need to certainly develop much more print media in many more languages. I'm very disheartened to see that the issue of local languages is not being pushed as it ought to be, certainly in print media. I think that the commercial players will always be threatened by smaller media, because ultimately the smaller media are the kind of training ground for people to go into the commercial sector. And so there's a fine balance and one has to tread very carefully. But ultimately, if we are going to be achieving the natural goals and objectives of our media in this country, we need to commit. And sometimes it takes a stronger will that we need to pull together and say, this is how we want to address it. And this is what we want to see in the next 3 to 5 years. So I think that the NDDS, for me, still has a life yet.
Well, Honourable John, you left.
Charlie, the Langer Agency. There's little that I disagree with what you said. But what worries me when one speaks to the NDDA and to people that are coming for interviews, that all of you see diversity as diversity by creating extra community media. Now, I have no problem with that. I think it's important. What worries me is that nowhere do I find anyone talking on how do you diversify the status quo. You know, I really have a problem with that. I can see that it's easier to try and create new voices. But the problem is all those new voices are dependent on funding, dependent on a very small market, it's a localized thing. And although there's merit in having those voices, I doubted that I would ever see the day that they will be the ones that start setting the media tone and the media agenda. I can't see it ever happen. Somehow, one has to change the diversity at another level to be able to change the content. I mean, the content that I would want to see is a content that is one that is intellectual, is more uplifting, although I always accept that there are going to be these rubbish newspapers that just do...
What do you call the thing? The one that will do the...
Tablet. There's always been those things, but you know, and I think personally our media is dumbed down. I mean, if you look at the Sowetan today, you can't see it as a newspaper book just 5 years ago, because they tried to compete with the song. Now, my problem is that nowhere do I hear that anyone sees a role for the NDDA to actually start tackling the status quo and to come up with mechanisms that will change diversity amongst the existing people that form the media content of the day. You know, and if we don't do it there, we're going to chase ourselves forever. I mean, we'll get more community media, and there'll be a level of diversification at a very low level. But what we hear, what we think, what we debate is going to be set by a certain agenda of highly independent Caxton and those ones. And, you know, I can see, and the real question I want to ask you, do you think that the NDDA is maybe structurally flawed? That the reason they don't do it and they do the easier thing on the community media is simply because the people that we've given the job are actually the people that are having to change. I mean, if you look at SABC, for example, SABC has always had people on the NDDA. They basically have a monopoly to a large extent on a lot of the TV stuff. If you look at all the SunF kind of newspapers, they have some people there, one would broadly say our SunF. Now, you know, if you ask those people, you must now look at the status quo and actually come up with plans and ideas to diversify. It just seems to me to be problematic. I mean, when I ask the people that sat there that are in those positions, don't think so. They don't think there's a conflict of interest. Well, they don't think so because they're doing something else that doesn't create a conflict. If they were tackling the SABC head on in terms of diversification, then there would be a conflict for them because that's the person where they work and so on. If the SunF people start tackling head on, the kind of diversity, then there will be a problem. So really, my question is twofold. It's really, do you see a role for NDDA to be able to start tackling those, the real issues? I call them the real issues. The ones that you really tackling power relations that you're going to today. And the second one really is, I haven't studied what's going on in the rest of the world, but and maybe the rest of the world don't have our problem in the sense that they don't need the diversity that we do. I don't know. But are there models that are different from ours that we can maybe look at to really create an institution that creates, when it tackles media diversity, it tackles the hard issue in our instance. I know this is a bit of a tough issue because it doesn't seem to be part of the public discourse amongst anyone. How do we tackle that kind of media diversity? But if you do have ideas, I'll be interested to hear.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think that, to start, I think I fully agree with you. And I've been one of the, of course, most critical and most cynical at times. I think there are a few things we need to consider. We need to consider the Act. And the Act is very clear in terms of membership of the board, commercial representation on that board. There's a reliance that wants to stay, and the Act says that. The Act talks about establishing an agency to be conducive to public discourse, which reflects the needs and aspirations of all South Africans. And I think that is where this Act has not come alive. There has not been that public discourse, and I agree with you. It talks about redress in terms of the marginalization of people, and I think to an extent it has addressed this. The fact that community radio listenership is up 7.1 million listeners in communities that are listening to community radio, I think is powerful. There's been a growth of 25% in the last year. To promote, media diversity primarily through community and small commercial projects. And I think we need to interrogate the Act now that it's established. We need to also look very carefully at the issue of content. And I believe content is queen, ultimately. There was a time when the DLC and several other institutions talked about a content independent production fund. And the idea was that there'd be this independent fund that would really be a fund to create innovative, cutting-edge, good content. And there's been these debates and there's been those discussions. We've not actually moved beyond that. The issue of ownership and control in this country, we need to accept for what it is. We need to accept that the ownership is still concentrated. We need to accept that it's going to be the party political line, it's going to be the totally, right wing or whatever it is. This is what's happening in our country. And I think ownership and control needs to be dealt with head on, and we need to start unpacking that. We need to also ask what has actually happened to real in-depth journalism in this country. We need to look at print tabloid, and we need to look at community radio, and we need to start listening to the content. And I think that I have not been doing the surveying of the countries and being humbled again by the many community voices out there, because I think often we are so urbanized, we forget that there are other voices and there are other opinions and there is other discourse. But it's obviously so on the fringe that we're not getting a swell of that voice being heard. So I think we need to find ways to pull that more into the mainstream. For me, ownership and control is critical. For me, the fact that commercial parties sit in the MPA, the fact that it is commercial players who contribute to this fund and are able to, I think, constrain it from time to time. I think for them it's kind of a corporate social investment, very nicely, it's their piece, and this is why we're sitting in the situation that we're in. I think the MDDA has not had enough muscle and peace to be able to say, this is a regulated space. Because we can't leave it to market forces, this is how it's going to happen. And this is the contribution and this is how the allocation will happen. And independently of all these entrenched stakeholders. You will recall that similarly where there was the issue of the digital Dzonga, which was then disbanded, you had major players from the industry sitting on these committees. We also have the other reality of where does the skill set sit? Who's actually got the ability to come to these committees? And so when you talk about capacity building, about mentorship programs, about what we're doing at a grassroots level, are we preparing people to come into these profiling portfolios as well? The other challenge on board member women need to understand in media, it's a very unfortunate thing, and that's why I say media education and media literacy is so critical in our schools and universities, is everybody wants to be a DJ. They wanted to be a presenter, they wanted to be on top billing, they want to, I don't know, be on the latest soap opera. And that is people's notions of the media. Now, when are we going to start saying, if we don't start shaping and changing, how are we going to create that discourse? And we have only but become victims, in a way, of what's happening in the commercial environment. Our community people want to be on radio, whatever. They don't aspire to being critical, innovative, and start using that intellectual capacity. And that's the problem, and I think it's a much bigger issue, what I'm saying, and how we need to address every single, individual component that eventually looks at this whole thing holistically. And that's why I think we need to review it as we move forward, in terms of what you start has done to the USF, what the MDDA has achieved, what the National Film and Video Fund has achieved, how the Film and Publications Board perceives this. We need to look at this in a much more overarching manner as we try to move forward. But I agree totally with you. I'm sorry, I wish I had a magic wand, I don't. But I think there are small ways you can start that. And I think it's in the way that you decide who gets a funder of grants and who doesn't. And how thoroughly you are doing that and what your criteria is. And have you actually said, I'm going to monitor this over the next year and I'm going to see how people's attitude and approaches of the subject matters might have changed. Because otherwise we would have done nothing. And I think that it is unfortunate that we have big moguls coming into the country and just feeding us more of the same. I'm shocked and horrified by the number of back pages we have in this country now. But, that was not, certainly when I grew up, I never saw that. Maybe my parents were wise, they kept it from me. But if we just look at what's happening now to our young people, I'm worried. And I think that we are being dumbed down. I think I get concerned when people call themselves youth and they're still in their 40s and they haven't had an intellectual discussion and they haven't actually said, I want to take you on, it's a problem. So I agree with you. I think small steps are the way we can intervene.
They're all good, I don't mean who.
Luckily, in North Korea, I think the ones here was 83 or so, and they usually refer to them. Maybe we're not so bad.
Honorable Verma? Honorable Verma? Oh, okay. Honorable Micah?
Thank you. I am a youth member. I just wanted to ask you what you think is, because we've done a lot of talking and I agree with a lot of what you said, but I want to hear from you what you think the one biggest challenge is facing the MDDA and what you would do to overcome this challenge.
Thank you. As I said, I think there are a few. I think that the determination of how the fund is allocated and how it's utilized, so what percentage goes specifically to print, community radio, and how that distinction is made. And I think why that is critical is because that has to be reviewed from time to time. I also think that in terms of capacity building, training, monitoring and evaluation, I get concerned because I think that when you monitor and evaluate something, you don't say, oh, well, I listened to it and it sounded good and so it's good. You need to dig deeper than that. You need to look at the structural issues around that community media, whether it's print or radio, whatever it might be. You need to look at the ownership and control issues within that service provider. You need to consider community participation and involvement, whether it doesn't have to exist, because we also know that a lot of that can be used as voice mouthpieces for other key individuals in the community. So you need to, you know, really scratch the surface there. I think that we also need to consider how it's made a difference and how it's impacted on the people living in that specific community. And often when you do the monitoring and evaluation, it's the recipients of these services that you need to speak to, as well as the people that actually run that service. So I think that kind of the normal market research has a place, but I think that we need to look more intensely at detailed research and analysis. I also think that perhaps it is time to say that sometimes we look for diversity in different ways. You know, diversity is not only diversity of opinion, of voice, of the languages we hear, but it's also about having fun. And I think we forget that at times, and specifically with younger people, is how we integrate and fuse that when we talk about the old Eastern model of educate, entertain, etc. So yes, I would look at that, and I would really focus in on the evaluation process as well.
We can address it in having fun. That's a nice one. Honorable Dilame is looking at me when I say nice one.
Sorry, I must just follow up because it's just interesting that you say that. I attended, there was an Indian market happening at the Newtown Precinct down in Johannesburg, and I think it was for the Festival of the Light, which is the Hindu festival. And there were quite a few people there, very mixed, etc. And somebody came up to me and said, I didn't know you were a Hindu. And I said, I'm not a Hindu. So they said, well, why are you at this Indian festival, which is the Festival of the Light? So I said, you know, we come from a long line of history from different countries, and the fact that I look a certain way, you cannot assume that I'm a certain religion. And also the people come from different parts of the world. They could be Buddhist, they could be atheist, they could be whatever. So when I talk about the issue around diversity, it's also our need, and we actually have to step out of the framework that we've developed, unfortunately, due to apartheid. When we look at somebody, we make an assumption. You know, we look at what they're wearing, and we suddenly think, oh, probably this, probably that. And I think that's what we need to start shifting on its head as well. So when I say having fun, I mean that also. I thought it was very funny when they said, I didn't know you were a Hindu, and I said, so sweet. I'm not a Hindu, but, you know, here I am having fun like you are. So this is what I'm talking about, you know, and there's space for that.
That sounds very much, I can still remember about your responses, they don't have follow-up questions. Maybe they are afraid before they start to respond. But thank you very much for your time and the time to you to have spent waiting for us to call you in. Wish you well.
Thank you.
Thank you. In front of you, there are buttons to press if you want to talk. The entire proceeding is recorded. So if you don't first, they might miss the recording. Are you making comments? Okay, no, nice to meet you. Any person on this. Feel free, relax. This honorable member will be asking you questions. If you are not sure about the question, you are free to indicate that you will be happy. I'm Eric Colon, acting chairperson for the committee. Other members will introduce themselves as they are asking you questions. Now, my first question will be, why you, out of the 10 people who have chosen for the NPA board?
Thank you, Chair, and let me express my gratitude to the committee to grant me the opportunity to come and speak about what makes me different from the rest. I don't take this opportunity for granted. I truly appreciate it. I think the fact is that I have been nominated by a group, which is the women's group, to come to serve on the NPA. I think what makes this group that is nominated, which is women, is that they are not only a vulnerable group in society, but as well they are invisible, very excluded in the media sector. And I think that my participation would not only ensure that their views and their presence are actually respected, but would also ensure that I ensure that there is more participation of women. However, I also bring specific expertise. I have a history, I think that my resume was reflecting. I have a history of working in the grant-making organization, which would be Open Society Foundation, and primarily working with the sector would be the community media. And at the time of the establishment of the NPDA, I was kind of in that sector. But I think there are also additional expertise that I bring, which I have an understanding of the fundamental role of particularly community media, but as well the need of diversifying the media to ensure that you don't have majority of citizens who are structurally marginalized because of language, but as well as that there is transformation that takes place in the industry. I am in the economic sector as well, and I understand the need for introducing some microeconomic reforms in the industry to ensure that there's diversity both in terms of race, class, and as well as ownership of the sector.
Thank you very much. Honorable Niki Pandora.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good day, Mr. Nkomo. Just want to find out. There's a lot of entities, as we call it, underneath the DOC. Each one plays a specific role. And sometimes they can't exist in isolation because they need each other. They need ICASA. ICASA needs Centec and the SFEC. They need each other. How do you see the role of the MDDA in this bigger communications world?
Thank you, Honourable Member. The media sector is a very dynamic sector, particularly with the introduction of technology. And there needs to be flexibility, but as well, you can't work in isolation, I can agree more with you on that one. However, if, for example, part of what MPG seeks to do as part of the defining the sector is to ensure that there's an introduction or there's access to ICT as a mechanism or as one of the key things to ensure that you increase access to media. So certainly there's a need for partnership with the universal services. There's a need for partnership with GCIS. So in reality, I do agree with you, but what MDA needs to begin to do is to actually provide serious leadership in terms of the shift in media and the need to be able to occupy such shift so that you are not left outside of it. I mean, part of it, for example, is that you would need to have what you call your multiple community centers with access to ICT, But that's not the role of the entity to ensure that an emphasis is built or the lack of to ICT or an ICT infrastructure. So what it means, part of that leadership is to identify new key trends that are emerging in the industry, but as well as what opportunities that exist, particularly for people who are structurally marginalized from a language perspective, but as well from an access perspective. So it's fundamentally leadership, but ensuring that as well as it looks at opportunities for partnership, so that leadership as well as a strong technical as well as financial support for it. So that it's not anything, it's not about just identifying opportunities, but also there's a whole comprehensive package to ensure that leadership is actually realized, or the objective of the leadership is actually realized.
Thank you, Chair. Afternoon, Ms. Kempson. Looking at your CV, I could see that you have a lot of experience in terms of advocacy gender issue. That it says to me you are an expert. Now, looking at the objectives of the NDPA and the responsibilities of the board, and you said you have been eliminated by a group of women which are vulnerable. I don't know whether you are aware about one of the objectives of the NDPA. But my question says, how would you make sure that the NDPA has its responsibility in terms of the group that you are talking about, that the group that is in practice? Because I think they also said for the bigger, 50% women. How would you make sure that those who communicate would actually close that gap of vulnerability, being the one who, if possible, can support the person? How do you balance that? And in which way can you express the views of the experience?
I think the monthly approach, that one can be distinct. One of the key things in my opening remarks when I was saying why am I different is that this group is invisible in the sector. It's invisible both in terms of class, it's invisible both in terms of ownership. And part of the strength that you're referring to is that of being an activist. Now, one of the key focuses of NDPA is not only advocacy for media and inclusion, but as well as the initial round of capacity building. And the reality as well is that the majority of people who are not participating in media right now is because structure is a marginalized. One, language as well as they don't understand how to participate and how to use media as a tool of empowerment, but as well as to ensure that they become active in their own development, but as well as to ensure that they strengthen local government. So there's a direct link between access to information, the quality of information, development, and as well as local government. So my activities which I think I'll bring to the board in this instance, one, to ensure that the grant allocation, that there is an allocation that goes through them, that women are recognized as a group that is important, that they are actually being funded. And then the second issue really is to ensure that the capacitation of the capacitation program that MDG undertakes is actually, there's a certain portion of funding that directly goes to women. In fact, as well as young people, because I mean youth, I mean a majority, some of them unemployed are sitting in communities. And you want to build, of course, integrated society. You don't only want to target women, but also you want to both target young people and youth. To ensure that you can. But I think there's even a bigger issue in relation to how you then ensure that the transfer of expertise becomes more sustainable. And I think that's a bigger challenge for everybody. And I think it's something that I think I would want to contribute in to ensure that the transfer of expertise is not just an attendance, the workshop or an attendance or getting the certification to on how to publish, on how to write, on how to produce news. But that is a sustainable common component and that's a person. Now, the issue as well is that women in particular constitute the majority of citizens in communities. And friend, one of the key things is that the NDA board, part of its own diversity, needs to actually make an interrogation of the current standards that we're given to say, to actually check exactly who becomes the beneficiary. Because if you don't do that, then it means that while we talk about some of the constraints that are existing in the mainstream media, is that we perpetuate the same constraints in the local media by not applying our minds in terms of how we ensure the diversity. Because the diversity is not only based on race and class, but also based on gender, and there needs to be a diligent effort to ensure that that really happens. So that's one of the key areas, again, institutionalizing. So once you institutionalize that as part of the criteria under which funding, support, and advocacy is actually provided. In fact, the other area is to ensure that when you talk to communities or people who are undertaking or are intending to pursue community development, it actually says you need to ensure that you integrate women, you also integrate youth in the project because they are members of the community. And once the benefits that are accrued throughout the community region is that they are accrued and benefited by all the members of the society.
Currently, if you look at, from what you have said, if you look at the funding, do you think the budget, the budget of the NCCA, do you think that is it endeavor enough to also communicate the issues that you've just spoken about? This is not endeavor enough. If you were to be a project to the board, how would you make sure that that happens?
Thank you, everyone. I think one of the key and the clear consensus in relation to the resource location of the DA is that it's still on the ground. And when it's still on the ground, it means that MDA will not even be able to fulfill its own noble objective or mission. So even when we then begin to talk about how we ensure that we actually speak to specific interest groups, we're not even anywhere close to that. I think one of the key things which I'm raising is how is it they can institutionalize the same the funding criteria? Like, you know what, 40% of the budget will only go through initiatives that ensure that women and youth are integrated. For example, I mean, currently, the community in the sector is male dominated. Women probably are only doing religious programs or children's programs. And on average, if you look at the staffing of community radio stations and as well as leadership of community radio stations, actually a lot of them really men dominated. So fundamentally, so when you talk about the gender transformation in the sector, which I think what that wants and they need to actually ensure that it builds the uniform program. And instead of unpacking the component of diversity, so the component of diversity to ensure that actually they will not be funding this kind of organization. Now, the question is to then say, how do you ensure that the MCA budget is in general? One of the key things I think was the committee needs to support the MCA to actually ensure that it does, in addition to all other institutional mechanisms that it needs to undertake, is that it does get additional funding so that it actually ensures that women and young people are actually part of all the community media projects because they are crucial. But not only that, I mean, I think there's even one other implicit issue that you are raising underlying. It's also about how women currently are actually portrayed in media. Because the presence and the presence of minority domination, but the presence of women in media as active members would certainly ensure that they would actually ultimately influence how women are portrayed in media. But the fact that they are in the periphery and they are marginalized, it means that it's men who decide how to portray women. So women are being decided upon. So there is a direct link between women's participation in the women in the sector and as well as youth participation in the sector and how that portrays. I mean, one of the key things is women are portrayed as sexual objects, for example. But the women have a voice to say, we actually do not think that this is who we are. We are very in society and we are members of the community. And we actually think that we do need a better respect than what media are. But they are not able to really push that because they are in the prison. And they are in prison because they don't have resources to buy shares that they can own. They don't have voice to be able to ensure that they are actually part of leaders. As well as it means that they remain invisible, both from a class perspective and as well as race perspective. And of course, they're excluded because they don't have sufficient resources. So I think their level of deprivation pushes them in this sense to become second-class citizens, which I think is a regression of what we've achieved in terms of the gender machinery and political role in the country.
Thank you very much. Honorable Gundalza.
Afternoon, Pesa. I'm going to ask you only two questions. First of all, I want to know what is the most important thing that you can do when you can be appointed to NDDA board? Secondly, do you think that enough advocacy has been done by the outgoing board to increase public awareness about the work of NDDA? And what steps would you take to maximize awareness as a board member?
There's a direct link between what NDDA does and how you ensure that you promote a reading culture. And I'm passionate about reading and something that I do every day, I read books. I think it's even though it's part of the objective of the organizational objective, but it has not been given life, but as well as a space that it really deserves. I think that's one of the key things that I'm quite passionate about, because how we then diversify media, so that we diversify media because particularly through media, and as well as discussion, is diversified because people are willing and ready to read. MCAES has become not a very visible organization. We have to be an active citizen to actually understand who MCA is and what MCA do and the type of support that people can really provide. Now, I come from a background, my strength that I bring is the issue of social mobilization. I truly believe in social mobilization, but as well as social organization for a particular cause. And in this case, it will be a cause to ensure that communities begin to take the issue of community media seriously as a tool and a platform, not only to record their collective voices, but as well as to ensure that they drive and influence the nature of the developmental program that they do. So we would need to make, and I think that's the kind of decision that I do, that we would need to make a link between what's the broad objective of MTDA as an institution that is aiming the environment to ensure that there's diversity and inclusiveness, but directly into community developmental goals. Because so it becomes a coin. So
one of the questions is self-direct. What is the most important thing you can do? The direct question, maybe direct response. You don't have to go ahead in terms of time to respond. That's one thing. If you are appointed, what are you going to do? In MDDA board and so on. So if you can try to focus directly on the question, not to generally.
I think I have done so. I think specifically my response was my direct response was that there's a direct link between rating and diversity of media. For me, that's one area that I would think particularly around advocacy of inclusion. I think the second issue really that I would bring in, for example, coming from an economic perspective, is that I would work very closely with the community to ensure that with an introduction of microeconomic reforms, particularly in the print media, to ensure that actually there are no barriers to entry, but as well as people who are structural and marginalized are able to be integrated in the sector. I think the issue that I raised as well as the third one, which I'm very clear, which I was raising, was that entity is actually a conduit. It's a link between citizens and society being able to achieve their own development agenda, and MCA could facilitate that it's becoming a platform through access to more much media.
Okay, thank you. Honorable
Gilla. It's a pleasure to meet young people. I see you were born on Christmas Day 1975. That was much, much after me. It's good to see and meet young people that clearly have some understanding of the kind of social milieu we live in and understand the politics of it. But in a way, it's a big strength of yours, but it also worries me slightly, and I want to ask you some questions. You see, once you start being represented on state institutions like MDDA, then clearly someone that nominates you to go there. But I would suggest that one needs to be careful that you see yourself beholden on the people that nominate you, in the sense that I'm going there to achieve their goals or something. Which is very strong. Look, all the things you say about the marginalization of women, I think you articulated very correctly, and I'm fully in support of it. But I'm worried to appoint someone who feels then that they're going there not to deal with all the interests of this institution. Because this institution are going to have the interests of very rich commercial people and very poor and marginalized women. But when you're there, clearly you need to be able to get the right balances in the way you work. So I really want to just give you a chance to answer that question, because clearly you come over very strongly that you're going there on behalf of the women and the youth. And if they interest you, really are going to. And the way you're saying it gives me some pause for worry, although I like your articulateness about it. But I want to will give you the chance to say how you're going to handle it if you were to be elected. In terms of the whole interest of the MDDA, and not just specific interests that you may feel you're representing.
Thank you, man. I think it was also because really the question was quite specific. But secondly, I would understand my assignment being broader than being outside or beyond the group or specific group. I think the contribution that I would bring is really to ensure that we strengthen the institution. I think coming from a grant making background, one of the key areas that normally links is around how to strengthen monitoring and evaluation of the projects that we funded. I think that's one thing. So that's an institutional strength that I'll bring. But as well as I bring in a broad perspective around development and the role of community media in development. So secondly, by picking up this group specifically, it was primarily linked to specific questions. But I think the other issue really is to actually ensure that how to then position MDDA so that it takes its right system. I think one of the key issues I make reference to is two things. One, I believe it is an economic inefficiency and an indictment that people want that community media project and not have no access to development finance, which I would think that it should be seen both as part of ensuring that there's access to the development finance, not only to pursue communication and access to information, but as well as to ensure that they build those community media initiatives with some level of commercial or business model. I think that's one thing. I think the second issue, which I mean, the other issue that I think I would bring as a strength is really it's in relation to how much the print media in particular has was not the same huge concentration. Broadcasting is in a different position. One of the key things that I think I would bring as a strength is to look at what are the barriers of the entry, for example, one in the print media. Why a content print project that are started do not see the light, but why do they not achieve what they are really intended? Now the issue there is that as well I'm talking about microeconomic in the form, because what you then would need to call for is either, which in other sectors is really happening, is the institutionalization of charter, that we have a charter in the industry to ensure that the registration in terms of ownership. But also a different type of application, which is different from other charter characters, that communities who are recipients of the news have a way of influencing the type of news that will change the package. I think that's another condition that specifically in the strength that I would really be bringing. But I think the other one is related to the area of capacity building. I write a lot, I publish a lot. So, and I think that's one of the key things that I would really, because I am aware that the board is a decision-making level. So obviously, I would not be having executive powers, but certainly it's a decision-making. But really, sort of how we influence the packaging of the capacity building program, so that it's really responsive to specific and capacity building. I think one of the key things that I think which I would also bring. It's about how do you then attract, what are the different things that you need to do to ensure that you build a much more stronger funding model of the MDDA. I'm not saying for any other reason the current funding model is not sufficient, but certainly if it does need the MDDA and MDDA is not able to pursue its noble objectives, then one of the key things is really to look at how do you broaden your partnership to ensure that they bring in, whether it's in terms of funding or monetary value to it, but or whether there's capacity that could be transferred. Currently, the ministry media is sitting with a lot of capacity, which is really untapped. And the capacity is not only about financial capacity, but it's about how you ensure that you transfer some of the expertise and you see the willingness. And you can only see the willingness when you talk about microeconomic reforms.
Thank you, Tim.
Oh, okay. Any other questions? Honorable Reverend.
Just a last quick one. As you have been expressed by other people, that a number of these small media organizations really beg for fundraiser and for profitability, if you want to call it that way. Do you think that, do you have any views as to how the MGDA could assist them to achieve sustainability?
I think the basic thing there is that we need to look at the model that is currently used to and when people are starting such a community media approach. So far a community representation seems to have more resilience in the shift. It seems to have managed to actually secure revenue to sustain themselves even in difficult times. But however, one of the key things which I would think that NDA needs to look at is because for people, and I'm just going to digress for a second and make a very simple example. For you to pick up a newspaper, a local newspaper, it's because it has local news. Yeah? It has things that you have an interest in. It's not, if I'm located in Bathurst, I'm not reading news about Johannesburg. I'm not reading news about the Bongo, but I'm reading local news. Now, what then attracts the ad spend in there is that there is no advertiser that's going to place an ad when they know that no local people are picking up the newspaper. So there is a direct link with how the quality of news is packaged, where the quality of news and who is the top news. And who then has an interest in advertising. And the issue, now and again, is how community, particularly on the print side, the collection of their news is actually removed from the daily reality of what's happening at the local level. For example, there's a huge opportunity and partnership with community, particularly print, with local government. As I was saying, that there's a direct link between the access to information and issue of, and the strength of local government. There's a huge opportunity around that. And the question is, what kind of platform is local government using to ensure that it continues to communicate with its own community members? I think that's one avenue. There's as well a huge opportunity to constantly communicate with the local business sector and to ensure that you look at different avenues. The need for creativity. They need to be different avenues where people are thinking of generating income. Now, one of the, for example, the tradition in print media in particular, and even in radio in the world, is advertising and it's marketing. And it's seen as the only source of income. So one of the key things, for example, is about saying you encourage community and print media groups. That's what you call an ambassadorial program. If you have an ambassadorial program, now, if you have an ambassador who says, well, I support this paper because it constitutes information that I like, but you're not going to have an ambassador who supports the community media that is not reflecting the news, it's not reflecting the community value system. So there's a very direct, intimate link between how you package your information and how you're responsive to what you need, and ultimately, the commercial component of the community. You don't have one size fits all because it really depends. In fact, one of the key things about the print media and culture is that there's a direct link between what we call income per capita and the situation of a newspaper, or income per capita and as well the listenership and the viewership. So the higher your income per capita, the more your control. It's about how you then tune it down to the strength of the community and what community brings in. And the struggle for a lot of community projects is the adoption of one size fits all without actually understanding the audience and the opportunity that that particular audience could gain. One, for example, the last example that I would make, I think the issue around issues of health, You can do a health promotion program. All of you that will partner with Department of Health and say, Mama, we would want to focus on issues of diabetes, we want to focus on issues of HIV/AIDS, we want to focus on, but with the good content into it. And what then is Department does, it's not in Department of Health actually, you can get to the World Health Organization. So you're sitting with a lot of diabetes, but only that it requires more thinking. I think this is where the NGD would need to strengthen in ensuring that it encourages creativity in within community in the project.
Thank you very much. I can see no better hand from members. You are welcome. Thank you very much for your time. And to Pastor Jia to wait until we call you. We can only wish you good luck.
Thank you.
Members, they are saying tea and coffee outside, but the snacks are inside because of the edges. Which were here in the morning, and the possibility of the timing, because there are some meeting with Chinese around, and they might come and go with everything. Okay.
You can't say that you can't have another good one. You can't say that you have
afternoon, sir. How are you? We're just waiting for the members just to stretch their legs and get something to do. And then we can start.
Thank you.
you can proceed. Afternoon, Mr. Matikita. And Eric Collan, acting chair of the committee. Feel free. If you need water, you can indicate or grab one or two. When you need it. Not red wine. Of course, we can provide red wine if that's not a problem. members will ask you questions. If you don't understand, you can ask them to repeat the question. For in the interest of time, we request members just introduce themselves that they ask you not to go through the introduction. My first question, which I'm just going to direct to you, is simple. We're shortlisted 10 people. Why do you think you are part of the team which you must appoint?
Okay. I've got for the past 3 years. Worked as a commissioner with the GCSA, as one of the commissioners there. I've studied media law, I've studied broadcasting law, I've studied government domestic, and I've studied public management. Some experiences I think somebody to consider for this position needs to have. So that's my basic response to it.
Honorable Rezondo.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Musa Zombie from the IRC. Many of you, what do you think are the most urgent challenges facing the MTTA in carrying out its mandate? And then, secondly, what do you think would be your most critical intervention or contribution to deal with the issues of media diversity, which is the mandate of the MCA?
You can go for.
Okay. Going back to challenges, I think for me, two are very critical. The sustainability of the funding that the MCA is doing, and secondly, the issue of how do you get the media, the established private media, which besides giving out ideas and information about the media, the print media especially, how do you get them to come on board and support the MDTA in carrying out the funding? First of all, if you say what are the solutions to this challenge, against the critical role which NPA could play, one would be playing an advocacy role. Advocacy, ensuring that all the relevant stakeholders, they are all involved to understand the mandate and the vision of NPA. Two, I think the other critical issue or the other solution would be research. Thus, the NPA at least now really understand what are the challenges or what are the fears that means. For example, the print media not to come on board. I see already they've done something in broadcasting media in the sense that there is a certain percentage that is coming out from broadcasting media. But the greater challenge, as I said, is more the print media. Say, do they really have facts as they're sitting down to say these are the challenges or these are the critical issues which print media needs to clarify before it can come on board or not? So that engagement with print media is also important.
You see the difficulty that since MDA was established, has been funded by the Kremlin, but the modern times so that it can continue its process and so on. We are talking about the research. Recent MDA released the research which has exposed that the ownership of the major player or of the print media in this country only lies within four big companies.
Correct.
Now, given the funding model and this research function of NPDA into the print media, do you think that it's sustainable? Because you say they must continue advocating so that everyone come on board. Can you really come on board where you are going to be digested yourself? Or where you are going to be cut into pieces yourself, you come on board voluntarily that the AFA must go there so that I can be chopped into pieces in terms of diversifying the issue of control and ownership. Otherwise, how do you contrast the research by NPDA and the advocacy in NPDA as a main treatment?
The way I look at it is an issue that requires, first of all, open discussion. Because if you look at the development recently from one of the statements of the main founders of NPDA, Abuja, they've taken a decision to say, we are going to start producing family times, for example, in Zulu, which is one of the aims of the NPDA. So, to actually say, this is possible, this can happen. But obviously, when there's a friendly discussion between the parties involved and all the stakeholders, I think progress can be made. Secondly, I think that there's also an element of community ownership. Because I lived in a country where there was community newspaper, community radio, community TV. And these institutions were run by the local people themselves. And in the process, yes, in terms of funding, there was struggle here and there. But the many people got that sense of ownership. There were people who were ready to volunteer their own little money, direct from their pocket, to ensure that the local community gets local news, in print or in broadcast.
So what we are saying, the fiscal net, which is taking the country and ensuring that those who are marginalized can be left to the goodwill of people who can be able to contribute or people. Because you see, we're talking about at the corner, the issue of the diversity, the issue of the mandate of NPDA, is also seen with the issue of culture, diversity of language and so on. I'm saying, are advocating that you must be those members?
No.
And the goodwill of people who can contribute, our people and so on?
No. Unfortunately, compared to other countries, South Africa is a very big country. And unfortunately, a lot of what is basic right cannot just be left to goodwill. Because that's where also you find that there's also a challenge of people dragging their feet to come on board. So some form of incentive, some form of maybe introducing a law that would say, this, you are obliged to do this, this needs to be elected.
Do you
understand correctly, sir, that at the moment you are a constitutional researcher manager at the
Yes,
and that you're also a commissioner of the BCCSA.
Yes,
sir. See, raising the issue, you see, the Act allows for participation of people employed with SABC and with media hours and so on.
Yes.
Some may think that's a flaw, others may think it's advantageous, so I won't debate that now. But you raised, your situation raises a different situation. I'm trying to think of whether it's appropriate for someone like yourself who's already employed in a government institution, or let me say more broadly, a state institution, like this commission, and your commission on the BCA, whether that is appropriate for you to be appointed now in another agency to government. Yeah, I mean, can you see the problem? I mean, maybe you don't see the problem, but imagine if we start taking people that work in these government institutions and start duplicating them into two or three structures. So I just wanted to respond. Don't you think that this is a bit inappropriate to be applying for this job when you're holding these other positions?
Yes. The BCCSA one is coming to an end in December. And as for me working for a chapter 9 institution, one of the aims of the PRI Rights Commission is to be sure to enforce, make sure of the fact that each culture is respected, each language in this country is respected. Something that is closer to one of the objectives of the NDCA. That's how I look at it.
But you're a staff member, you're employed here.
Yes.
And then you want to take time now to go and work in the other government stuff as well. I'm just trying to think of the viability and the appropriateness. I mean, I'm not suggesting there isn't a link. I mean, there's a link in anything, maybe. But this is the right on religion, on language and things like that, and culture. And, you're not even on the commission, you're not a commissioner there, you're actually an employee, you're a researcher. Alright, look, maybe I'm scared to ask you the question, maybe I'm just make up my own mind. That was the one thing, there was a second issue. What was the second issue? Okay, do you know what the second issue is? I can't remember what my second issue was. I'm going to find it now,
but
I'll give it to someone
else
in a moment.
We are waiting for you to find the issue. Honorable Rev. Goldie.
While we are finding the issue, Chapter 10. I wasn't quite clear in his answer whether when he referred to issues of financial sustainability or viability, whether he was referring to the MDA as a whole or of the entities that the MDA is trying to promote. If I could be clarified, then I'll cast some for that question.
You can clarify it.
I was referring to both of them, because I'm looking at the situation whereby NDA shouldn't just be seen as dishing out money. But the people who are receiving money, there should be some form of accountability. There should be some form of ensuring that money is used to what the intended cost. Now, if you say you're just going to dish out money, for how long are you going to dish out money? And the institutions that are going to be recipients of this funding that is coming from NDCA, what is it in the meantime that they're doing to go towards self-realization or self-sustainability? That's what I mean.
I want to find out, you know, it's very easy to sort of talk about all the issues and the importance of diversity and community must be involved and everything. You know, we can carry on talking about that for hours. But the fact of the matter is to go out and do the job of a board member in the MDDA to make sure that service is delivered where you need. And to keep that new projects or whatever, to keep them sustainable, that's actually the thing.
I agree with you, sir. You are correct in suggesting or saying that number one thing is service and the actual doing of the job. But then, at the same time, I think just to add on what you just said, I'm also a strong believer in education. But unfortunately, like I said earlier when I answered to you, that South Africa is a unique country in the world. We cannot just presume that everything is in place. They also, in doing, there also needs to be a lot of integration that goes together. But I agree with your comment.
And what can you do about
it? About what?
Your comment. How do we take forward what you are saying? And the fund of it.
The way I look at it is I look at it as two things. There's what which will need to regularly come up with strategies to ensure that the MDA mandate is met. And there's the implementation part of the post, which is under the direction of the CEO and his staff. So at the board level, I think that's where practical solutions, not just talk, as the honorable member said, but practical projects and practical things that are just better put forward for the ability to start to do.
Honorable Moroi.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good afternoon, Mr. Brian Makeke. In order to understand what the mandate of the MDA is, and I think all the questions that have been coming up are trying to understand what exactly is your priority to do. One, maybe to change the present situation we find ourselves in South Africa in terms of transforming the mainstream media. Where do you focus exactly? Because our questions have been coming up here, and you have mentioned so many things already. That's why I say I think you understand the mandate of the MDA. Yes, it's good to say all the things that you have said. But if you want to get a person who is realistic about the whole thing, how you think, what would your mission and vision to really transform the mainstream media in terms of dealing maybe with the views of the budget alliance. Yes, you have mentioned the committee through the media. But when we talk about the content, it seems that we are still very far away in dealing with the views of these sectors, the marginalized, like people in particular, the women and the disabled. And I think, yes, we are, you know, satisfied with what everybody is saying here, talking about the mandate of the MDA, you know, dealing with the issues of the previously disadvantaged and marginalized communities and all that. But now we are going for the, you know, the real issue here. We are talking about the mainstream media, and we want to know whether we can get this person who can deal with what is the problematic at this moment. What would be your vision? What would be actually, you know, your direct, you know, tackling of this? Thank you.
Well, first of all, then, just before answering your question, if you'll be allowing me to check it and start from the initial. The first thing is, in essence, if you're on this board, the first thing I'll demand on the very first meeting of the board myself would be from the current board and from the administrative side, what has been done until now, and what has been the challenges with regard to the question you have posed. And move from there with the understanding, a better informed understanding of what the challenges have been and what has been done. Because I think we should also, much less, yes, the vision is there and it's clear, but we should also move away also from the fact that nothing was done or nothing exists. And my approach personally would be, after getting information of what was done, what were the challenges, is to say, how best can we try to implement that which would be my second question. So, unfortunately, I cannot give you the answer now because I'm not privy to that information.
I just want to understand something. You say, when you say you come now to work on a crazy that information, you want to tell me that if you are appointed, you are still going to learn about NDA. You don't know anything about NDA. Well, I will ask you that you have done something to be respect. You understand what is NDA, what it's all about, and so on. And that if you can clarify what does it mean that you are not free with the information. Does it mean that if you are appointed, you are still going to start afresh to understand what type of agent is MDBA, what they are doing, and so on? What does that mean?
It does not mean now people are absent. There's something that I have, and I understand. But as to the final thing which I suspect is what the Honorable Member is asking. That's what I
said. Honourable Member, what you are asking? Okay. Honourable Dylan, I still can't find it.
I think now when you look in the newspaper, I can remember what it was, but I can't.
Any follow-up question, Member? If none, Mr. Makeketa, thank you very much for that. I can see a likely delay to start in terms of the time we were supposed to start our apology. But we wish you good luck.
Afternoon, Mr. Oka.
You are most welcome.
Okay.
And we appreciate that you have taken a keen interest or to accept the nominated to be part of the NDA board. Should you be so appointed? You can just listen to that. I can see you got a double barrel of water. Honourable members will ask you questions. If you don't understand the question, you are able to request a member to repeat the question. I'm Eric Colon, acting president of the committee. Members will introduce themselves as they ask you questions. That's the first time that you don't go one by one to do it. But my very first question, Mr. Oshar, will be, given the fact that you've got three openings,
and we have prohibited 10 cities. Why it should be one of the cities?
It's a focus question, but I think I should start by saying that I've been a journalist for 30 years. It's been in the print media primarily, but it's attached, I've been to the table, I think, different kinds of media experience. I've worked for newspapers and magazines, firstly. Secondly, I've worked for mainstream commercial publications, and I've worked for the so-called alternative media. And I think, thirdly, not only have I worked as a journalist, but I've also worked for media organizations, and I've held various positions in advanced in various media or media-related organizations. So I think I've been a combination of different kinds of media experience to allow for what I would bring to the board.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Musa Gomi from the IFP. As someone who comes from the background of both the mainstream media print organization and alternative media, you have a view of both worlds in that sphere. What do you think are the particular challenges that faces the kind of objective community that the MDDA is charged to promote? And how do you think you will be able to make a contribution there? And what sort of contribution do you think urgently needs to be made?
I think in response to the first part of the question, I think there are serious infrastructural problems faced by the community media. Issues like distribution, they have to rely on commercial entities, and I think that sometimes can make it prohibitive or difficult to reach the intended audience. Also, I think they don't have obviously access to the on-print facilities, and I think that's another obstacle that the community media faces. And I think depending on which community the particular media tries to reach, I think there's also problems of literacy in terms of there's a language issue, what language you publish in, and I think the community needs to define that very clearly and carefully up front. But I think South Africa being a heterogeneous country, I think whatever decision is made, obviously, is going to be compromised of one sort or another. But I think, just to summarize what I'm trying to say, is that there's issues of literacy, there's language considerations as well. And I think just, again, depending on which community you are in, that I think there's problems in terms of disposable income if the particular media is a for sale publication. The second part of the question is a bit more difficult to answer, but because I've worked in the commercial media as well, you know, I would hopefully be able to, you know, with the MDDA board, enter into negotiations if that hasn't been attempted before with the owners of the press and the selling distribution outlets. But I think, you know, hopefully reach more favorable negotiating conditions. But I think it's a very tough thing, and I would need to firstly from the guys on top of what MDDA has already been doing to be able to identify what additional contribution I could make. But I think it's the second part of the question is a bit more tricky to answer.
Honorable Pandora.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good day, Mr. Robert. My name is Ricky Trabar. I'm from the DA. If you look at the one of the objectives of the ANC, the MDDA, encourage ownership and control of and access to media by historically disadvantaged communities, as well as by historically diminished indigenous language and cultural groups. You come from the established media institute in South Africa. I think I'm not wrong if I say about all the small little newspapers in South Africa, in certain dorpies or villages or whatever, is in a certain way linked to the bigger, say for instance, media feelings or whoever. So Do you think, especially in the print media, this will be possible? We know in certain areas the radio stations, they are more independent. But the look around Cape Town, all the towns here, there's a lot of radio Tegerberg, radio this, radio that. Small little community radio stations doing very, very good jobs to inform people about what's going on. But this meeting of this objector, especially encourage ownership and control of. Do you think that will be possible?
It's a difficult challenge. I think, you know, from what I know about NDA, it has been more successful in terms of building you know, support for community radio stations. But I think the problem has with the place, a bigger problem is exactly in terms of building capacity at the level of the print media. It's difficult for me to quote examples all the time, but I know of a publication in Mpumalanga, for instance, which is able to sustain itself. I think maybe part of the answer would be to enter into partnerships with some commercial media or owners. And that has happened. I think of Bursa, well, Catherine in particular, has a lot of partnerships with local little, you know, knock and drop. But I think the partnership, obviously, it can be tricky because to maintain, you know, the suitable ratio of community ownership versus commercial ownership is always difficult. And I think the temptation will always be there because of commercial considerations, some commercial companies to kind of, in a sense, take over. But I think that is where I see a particular need for the NDVA. I think it needs to provide a support. I don't think it answers the question, a daily seminar on which community one it is, to be sustainable, to accredit it rather than lesser degree. But it's, I think that is a key challenge. I'm not quite sure if there will always be, if a community print meeting will always be successful and sustainable. But I think, you know, the NDVA, I think that it is cheap. Tend to do what it can to support such an area.
I'm a bit worried about your answer, because it seems that you are thinking small. You see, I think the question Mr. Van der Berg asked is that when this agency was created, it had big intent. Look at the preamble, it's to help create an enabling environment for media development and diversity that is conducive to public discourse and which reflects the needs and aspirations of all South Africans. And the second one is the redress of exclusion of marginalized groups, and the third one is to promote community kind of media. Now, the problem with your answer that, you know, and the problem I have with the NDDA, with their emphasis only on community media, is that that's important. But that is the periphery. If you want to change media diversity, you have to change the message that your newspaper that you belong to is creating every day. I mean, they dominate the media message, the media discourse. It's dominated by Claxton, Independent, Abushan, and whoever else. Where there's basically exclusive white ownership. Now, the problem is that if we tinker and just do the community media thing, and even if some of these companies are magnanimous enough to help that and make it sustainable, we're really tinkering with the periphery. And we will never achieve these objectives of the NDDA, even as they stand in this legislation. Clearly, from everything that I've heard of the NDDA and from people that have belonged to it and so on, they're not even vaguely touching their main mandate. They're on the community media issue. For obvious reasons, it's easy and so on and so on. So my issue really is that shouldn't the NDA, you are elected to, shouldn't you be doing what the Act is really saying and not doing what they're doing, but that a stronger focus has to be on dealing with the, where the power is. And the power to dominate the media discourse is clearly in those houses that we spoke, that you mentioned. The second issue that follows from that then is people of the FABC have said what you said. You're very prominent in the media as a senior journalist, and you have been part of some. Now, with the fact that the Act is structured in that manner, that the main role players, and what I would even go so far as to say, where there's possibly monopolies within the media industry and so on, definitely FABC in terms of TV, and some of you, some of the practices in the print media, for example, printing. Wouldn't the structure of the Act prohibit to really address the point that Mickey has made? If you really have to address the lack of ownership by marginalized groupings, and I must also add very quickly that I'm not a big advocate only for redress of ownership, because if you replace one conservative with another conservative, and the only difference is that the one is black and the one is white, we're not really going anywhere. So that in itself is not the deal, but it's one of the goals of this Act. And then thirdly, would you personally then, if you were to have to start playing such a role in the NBA, would you have difficulties tackling the people that pay you?
Well, the question is better to answer the last question first. At the moment, I'm working in freelance journalism, and I had problems in where I worked at the Cape Times, which is owned by independent newspapers. And part of the reason, or one of the main reasons I left, is because I had fundamental differences with the approach, to the crew, the way that I'm accompanied, was I thought that too single-minded focus on profit, which they need to do to be sustainable, but I think they neglected or didn't pay enough attention to other responsibilities that I think the leadership plays, particularly in South Africa. I have spoken several weeks in the last 2 years, and I think, my background as a journalist, it hasn't only been in commercial media, I've been involved in organizations, I've been involved in unions, and there are New Nation learning teachers as well, and also in organizations like Comarco, where I work full-time for the trading. And I'd like to think that I've always been prepared to speak up when necessary. Secondly, again, I'm frustrated, I didn't take notes while I was speaking, there's a whole number of social issues. But the one point about only thinking with community media, to come back to learn and teach magazine, for instance, which I worked on, that was a national magazine, and I think it was extremely successful. Its main purpose was to play a role in adult basic education. And for me, it was a strategy that it sold, if I remember all families were going about 10 to 15 years ago, it sold 15,000 to 20,000 copies a month, whereas a commercial magazine like Tripit magazine sold 10,000 copies a month. But the problem was that advertisers were more keen to put the money into a publication like Tripit, which was seen as the kind of top end of the black middle class leadership. That's understandable, but I thought it was almost criminal for them not to realize, or even from a commercial point of view, the importance of a publication like Learn and Teach, as it is on the national. The one thing that I think it had in its favor was it was a kind of a union language publication, mainly. And I think that also enabled it to broaden its reach. Just about this, like, I think that's the difficulty with community media, is the whole fragmentation caused by adding to this local language. So I think, there is room for a publication like Learn and Teach, whether, because of its early stage, whether it can work, will be able to survive this on the commercial limits law. That's another question. As I said, that's going back 10, 20 years ago. I'm not quite sure if the environment has changed sufficiently since then for a publication like that to survive. Then we'll just to move to another point that you mentioned, the ownership of the media. That's actually a key issue. If
you go back to 1994, there were essentially four media companies owning the newspaper magazine in this country. If you fast forward to 2010, where we are now, the legend may have changed, but it's a very, both of the four media companies essentially. The new companies are Prime Media, Kakisa Media, but that's a very electronic media. But to respond to you now is very difficult because South Africa we function in a free market economy. How do you intervene, without going against the way a free market is supposed to operate in this country? So I think we have a difficulty with it. It's a real structural problem in this country. Four media owners only. And I think that the issues I mentioned earlier of distribution, printing, etc. They do have a monopoly over that. I mean, I can remember once when I tried to change from one distribution company to another, there was no point. Instead of paying 50 cents of the cover price of 2.94 at that one company, you would pay 55 cents at another company. So they do have the overall battle in that sense. But, the one obvious thing is, which is what we're really doing is contributing, to the end. That's obviously not enough. But I think the difficulty in responding, adequately to your point, it doesn't need to be responded to at some point, but I think the difficulty is that how do we intervene, in so-called market forces?
But do you understand the consequence of your answer?
The
consequence of your answer is that therefore we should not be able to change anything that is involved in the present four big four. Because if you say that what is dominant and what is God is the fact that it's a free market system, well, most countries in the world are free market. There's hardly any countries. I mean, the ones that were socialists have all collapsed and they don't exist. So everything is free market. So where there are mechanisms and so on in the rest of the world to create that diversity, surely you're not suggesting that one can't try and actually use them?
No, I would agree that
would be the consequence of your answer.
Well, there are some reasons. I think, for instance, in the US, I'm not an expert on the US, but there are limitations on cross-ownership of print and broadcasting. I think, for instance, that is something we do need to look at in South Africa. I think one would need to explore what mechanisms are available, I think, in greater detail. I'm not at all saying that we shouldn't say. All I'm saying is that what is immediately available is for them to support other ventures falling outside
you see the problem with your approach is the thing that Nikki said, honorable from the back, that these are the objectives of the act. And you're never going to reach them if that's the approach.
Well,
you can never reach them. I mean, you can create as many community media as you like. You never will absolutely even make a 1% dent on the fork of absolutely controlling the content of and the public discourse on the media. And so I'm really, I need to look at you and see who the kind of person I can put on there and vote for to change that. And it's worrying me that you seem to think that the free market system stops us from doing that.
Please,
I'll be out if you want me to think of you as a candidate.
Yeah. I'm saying that this is the reality, this is the context in which you operate. But I'm not saying that you shouldn't explore mechanisms to address that. What those mechanisms are, I'm saying to you, as of this moment, I don't know. But what I'm also saying is that, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't explore them. But also your point about that essentially nothing has changed, but I'm paraphrasing what you're saying. I think to those communities that the NVDA has reached, however peripheral,
However small they are, and I think it must have made a difference for us as before having that access information, which would help them enable them to make informed decisions about their life. Now at least some people do. whatever its limitation may be, I think one cannot disregard it and say, you know, it's having no impact at all.
Are you a board member for Sanet?
Not at the moment, I was 3 years ago.
Okay. Because I think the issue of research is of free market. You know telecommunication. They are also operating in a same environment, which you say is a free market. But they've got a high tech, what they have. What I fail to understand is your response, the suggestion we say our hands are tied because of the system. But we've got all the other industries which have, which it takes in terms of ownership and others in the same free market. Why we find it difficult when it comes to prison? That the system becomes important than dealing with the structural problem which we are facing at the time.
I was trying to say that the environment in which the media functions, I think I was saying that is the starting point. I was saying that we should be, in the sense how the office is such an experience to come home. I mean, the point that the chair that you're making about the media charter, it's true, you know, most industries do have a charter, and maybe that's something that should be looked at more closely. And it's unclear why the media isn't taking the initiative to develop such a charter, or why the issue hasn't been raised with the media about the need for such a charter.
Maybe I'm comfortable because MDBA is very referring to people in community radio station and community station. Don't you think?
I think probably, you know, we're doing enough. You know, we're giving some money, you know, to the NGDA, and that's how it's going to go. That's quite possible.
Mr. Oka, thank you very much for your time. And like I said, to present yourself in a very personal meaning. From where I sit, I can only wish you good luck. Thank you very much. Pronouncing your name wrong, it's Mr. Mbuba.
Mbuba, yes.
Okay, with a name which is similar to the deputy president of the country. Okay. No, we can call you Halima, I suppose.
It should be some other group, you
have
five.
Okay.
The royal name.
The royal name?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And members of the group themselves, they are being called.
Okay.
So that we also take time. My first question will be around the issue that there were shortlisted 10 people for 3 positions.
Okay.
All those who have interviewed, they told us why we must take them. So if your help, why must you be part of the 3, which we need?
So I must tell myself.
Mm-hmm. If you can.
Okay, thank you very much. I have been in the media industry, not media alone, in the communication environment, PR, marketing and advertising for the last 16 years. And I have done several courses and also done some sort of training in the country and outside and also in parts of Africa. I participated in structures of communication and marketing in the country and outside. And I'm currently working as an executive director of marketing and communication. The good part is that I've been a teacher, and I also did some work at the old technical, or also did some work at the university on part-time basis, or on voluntary basis in terms of media studies at my university. I in terms of the aspect, I looked at the aspect and I noticed that you're looking for a person who has got quite a number of skills. We should have quite a number of skills, but one not actually have all of skills. My area of concentration is obviously in the advertising, in the marketing, in the communication, also in the public relations. That is my area, and I think that the 15 years that I've been in that industry would qualify me to be in here. Especially when I went through all the echelons. I started as a peer practitioner, and I went into a director, and I went into the acting capacity, and I'm also concerned as an executive director. I work at a tertiary institution, which is very challenging by its nature and character. And sometimes we engage and criticize some of the writings of our people, and also offer some solutions. One has also participated in a number of training sessions at municipalities, especially in Mbogo, assisting them in terms of communication strategies. So that is in brief an experience that one has that will convince members to. But I believe also that this experience will assist me in adding zero to MBTA board. I have gone through their documents. There are certain things that I like. There are certain things that I believe can be improved. There are certain areas that I believe that the one called the board can actually play a role in making the presence of MBA felt in all parts of the province, or all parts of the country, especially in the other provinces that I checked are not very covered by the activities of the MBA. Thank you.
What does it mean? You said when you put that document.
Part of the things that I've seen is that I come from Limpopo, and as I go through the documentation, I did not very clearly see how MBTA plays a role in terms of activities or projects. There are some pockets of examples of projects that were done. So I believe that my presence here would assist in terms of expanding, especially in provinces like Mpumalanga and Limpopo.
I will not be appointing a regional person. We're going to focus on regions, not the national interest, because MBA is a national organization.
Not really. I'm just telling you about my observation in terms of how I analyze the documentation. It does not necessarily mean that I'm regionally based. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Samidila?
I'm a little bit confused because I understand you're involved in marketing and communication, but you do understand that the MDDA is not necessarily a structure involved in communication. It is there to deal with diversity in the media. Media being print, television, all those aspects of it. And I haven't heard you say anything about what you bring to that, what skills and what competencies you bring towards being able to contribute to helping that goal of the agency to diversify. And secondly, once you've answered that, then I would like to know what is it in your reading of the MDDA and the studying you've done for this interview, what is it that you think is most lacking in what the MDDA is doing to try and bring about that diversification of the media? Let me hear it for that now.
Can I start with the last one? What I saw in MDDA, not necessarily lacking, but trying by all means to achieve, is funding. They've got very grand plan in their strategic document. And then what is indicated as a challenge is funding. How do you then attract people in other sectors or other stakeholders to participate in funding some of the programs that are yet and to diversify what we are talking about? And the short answer to your question, your first question is that I have indicated that I've got the following fields, and some of those fields are indicated in the asset. So one is not like crazy with the activities of the board, but one is was able to engage the document. I indicated that I did some media training, I did some PR, I did some communication, and I did some marketing. And if I read the what we call the asset word, it tells me that some of those skills are needed. I do understand that it deals with the media per se, as you are indicating to me. But obviously there's a role that one can play in terms of the skills that one has.
Thank you, Jefferson. My name is Nikki from the Barham from the DA. Sometimes it's very easy to talk about certain things. You know, it's very easy. You have got an idea how it's working and everything, and the importance of diversity and development and everything. But it's one thing to talk about it, and it's one thing to just do it, as the Nike advert says, very good advert, just do it. And the just do it is a very difficult part. To be very, very dedicated, to go out and see that what you begin, that it is well round up and running. Can you give me an idea how you strategically think about things like this? You've got an idea, and to unfold this idea in a practical thing.
I believe that board members would have different skills, and you would not necessarily possess all the skills that are required in the asset. And the second thing is that I'm one person who don't want to take a position where I know I'm not going to fail. I just don't like parading my name in a number of boards. I parade my name on the board that I believe that I'm entering. I just don't want to say I want to be a member of the board, and from there, get all whatever is there and not perform. The commitment one can make is that if I don't perform in respect of what is expected of me, what is the reason of me sitting there, I believe that the board, as I said, would have a number of people with different skills. And the skills that I've already indicated, when we start working, for sure there will be an assessment by other members of the board in terms of responsibilities given to that portfolio that I will be getting or that I'll be participating in. But I think that we have a chance, and they will assign some responsibilities
And in terms of justice possibility, you actually be expected to give reports in terms of how you have performed. So if I am deemed that I'm not performing, what would be the use of me operating my name in the board when I'm not doing that? So the judge who is part of it is that you have got this action. It has got the board and the management. The board has got its own responsibility. The management has got their own responsibility. And you must make sure that one justifies what you're saying in terms of just doing it. You will have to get direction. The framework is there. The act is there. The framework is there. The strategy document is there. And that strategy document last thing, which is ending in 2012, is something that gives you the guidelines. It has got all the information, all the challenges. You don't have to fix what is not broken. If there's something that is working within MDDA, continue with it and cherish it and consult. So I think it's a matter of understanding your role in the board. So there's a board available, there's a management available. I would know my role, management would know my role, my board member would be able to say, here is your responsibility in the field, in terms of the skills that you possess.
I don't say that. You see, the difficult thing is that we've been told that before the democratic transition, there were four owners of the pyramid. You can distribute it, printing, and the other thing. After 16 years, we still have four. You have seen the act or read the act, the objective of the act, why you have not moved according to your analysis, given the legislative that you are having an NDA, but we seem to be finding ourselves in the same position everywhere.
One of the things that I observed is that NDA is not wrong. This is my opinion. One structure that is not known. For as long as people do not know the structure, and for as long as people do not know the objectives of the structure, there is no way that actually people will take ownership of that structure. Don't accuse me of being a regular person, but I will indicate that when I read the document, it says the presence of MDDA is more prominent in the Western Cape and part of South Africa, and we've got 9 provinces in the country. And you look at what is happening in the other areas to say, as you correctly put it, you still have 4. Because the challenge that we're facing in this country is that most of the people who do not want to go into the mainstream, they would want to create some little bit of structure without any understanding. But if I read the document well, and if the MDDA was clearly marketing itself and its activities, we would not actually be giving that kind of a challenge. Because they've got very grand projects. But my biggest problem is that MDDA is not known. And if MDDA is known, and money is clear, and we know what they are achieving, they are likely to achieve, obviously the entire South African society will be able to participate. I have seen in the document, they are talking about community relations that they have assisted. I will include the number of them. But my biggest problem is that this situation is not known. And it has to be known. Its objectives are supposed to be known. Its funding structure must be known. Its assistance to develop the media industry, especially the media that is at the lower level, so that they can go up to increase the number of the four that they're talking about so that you can expand. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. You speak about four things that you have and areas of expertise. What exactly do you think your area of expertise within the NDDA would be? And my second question is, what do you think is the greatest shortcoming of the NDDA, and what do you think should be done to rectify?
My area, which I would say I'll concentrate on, is an area of marketing. I'm emphasizing that this product called, this institution called NDDA is not known. We must make sure that that area is, that institution is known and what it aims to achieve. We must make that very clear that it aims to achieve the following. And we must also indicate who do they target. The target audience or the target market of the MDDA should be very, very clear in terms of the skills that one will bring. So the first thing is that this institution should be marketed. Its objective should be marketed. How it can assist the lower level community in terms of going into the mainstream. That is the bottom line. That is an area of marketing. And that is how you are going to justify this diversity part of it. To say you are not doing it at the top level. You are moving somebody at a lower level to make sure that it goes into the middle level until he reaches the top four, as the chairperson is suggesting. So the marketing part of it is very important. And when you do the marketing, for example, you have got to know your target market. You don't market for the sake of marketing. You market because there are certain objectives that you want to achieve. And one of those objectives is to say, MDDA has to be known to the public out there. Can you remember the second question?
So, you already identified that the shortcomings in marketing, and I think people have identified how you rectify it because you speak with a few folks in marketing. So, I think you did answer that question.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Montalvo Nicolai. I want to claim the induction, Chairperson. I want to take Mr. Mahoba to the beginning. I am a bit sympathetic about looking at what the NDDA has not been able to achieve in specific regions of the country. Now, taking that into consideration, your observation and your submission that you think that unless MDDA is known, it is unlikely to achieve its objectives. I take it that there are media organizations that are mushrooming here and there that require the assistance that the MDDA is supposed to provide. I'm sure they would do their own research. They would know that there is such an entity as the MDDA. Now, taking that into consideration, do you think there is a systemic failure in the operation of the MDDA as such? If there is, how do you think this could be remedied? Secondly, looking at the funding structure of the MDDA, that the MDDA is funded by the very established media and print entities on a voluntary basis. Do you think there is room for improvement there? And what would be your particular contribution in making sure that what the MDDA was established for is actually achieved?
Can I start with the last question? Because that's the one that I remember. The first one I've asked you to repeat.
I've not said that. You always start with the last one.
Yeah, I think the voluntary part of funding should actually be diversified. And I believe that there are certain sectors of the business community that should have been approached to make sure that they play their role so that the objectives of the NDDA can be achieved. From the organizations that are funding, those are the organizations that are currently at the higher level, at a very higher level, and who would not necessarily understand any project which is happening at the rural area, as a rural area, where you've got an artist who wants to push himself up. But if you identify the local people and the local partners who would be able to know that person, who would be able to share the kind of the project that one is doing, one thing for them is to actually attract a lot of funding from quite a number of funders. One would know that you've got quite a number of people who have got valuable resources and who are not able to fund because of poorly arranged type of project. And I was just yesterday I was talking to somebody from Nedbank Foundation who wanted to fund something in Limpopo. And one of the challenges that they raised with me is that there is no institution that is assisting these people to come up with a project proposal, for example. So even in the rural areas, you've got such structures that empower those people with training of submitting proposals, for example, so that the MDB agent can take guidance in terms of assisting them to develop a proposal. But you find that the funding is locally based. So the local funder is there, the local person who is leading the project is there. Then there's more of an ownership of some sort. So then you'll be able to have the monitoring and evaluation in terms of how that project is going, in terms of MDBA principles. So I'm saying the strongest pressure that must happen should not necessarily be relegated to the higher level alone. It should also be relegated to the middle level and to the lower level. Because you can't move from the top and go to the bottom. So that must also be identified. Your first question, Reverend.
The chairperson allows me. The first question was, do you think that there is a systemic problem in the nature of the structure of the MDDA, which prohibits it from achieving its objectives?
I think the MDDA has grown. From where it started, it has grown fairly well. And I think how they structure their organization and how they structure their management structure, it's not a question of just bloating the structure for the sake of bloating the structure. There are certain specific roles that are there. What I found dating but which is appearing in their strategic plan is the communications unit. Because some of the things that I'm raising here could actually be achieved by whoever does communication marketing for the organization. So I think it's well structured. Its portfolio, in terms of management portfolio, is very okay. But what is systematic? Systematic is I'm just looking at the communication and marketing part of it, which is lacking in order to make sure that this institution is known. You know, it's got at every government, it's got people who would be able to fund some of the projects that are listed here. And some of the projects, especially in community radio stations, you've got funders who are funding local community radio stations, but who are not listed as part of the funders. And many of them are there. Many, many of them are there in terms of this objective.
Honorable Dazan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Vincent, as a member of the community. My other question is partly covered, though I'm not so glad because also as I said to Limpopo only, not to all the provinces. My question is, what is the most important thing you can do when you are appointed to MDDA office?
You know, I'll put the question in this fashion. One of the mistakes that we do, especially when we sit in the board, is that we fail to study the organization. If you give yourself a time of studying the organization, get the background of MDDA, why it was established in the first place, what has it achieved in terms of its role in the last number of years since the SS was passed in 2002. Have a good understanding of the organization Because I believe that for as long as you don't do an introspection of that organization, you can't go and target a role that you play. But there will be some specific roles that are there in the organization. And other board members, like I indicated before, came here, possess a certain number of skills, and they will be able to say, Huber, you are strong in this field. We believe that you would be able to achieve the objectives of the board. Let's say communication as the objective. Or you will be able to take LDGA to what level in terms of the skills that you have. Let me give you an example. You've got people who specialize in media law, for example. You have people who specialize in advertising. You've got people who specialize in regulatory affairs. So you would not necessarily take that person to do advertising when he has done media law. So he has to be correctly placed. So my shortest answer to your question is that the board will decide in terms of the skills that one has. And I have already indicated what kind of the skills I have. And also, what is very important, study the organization, study how it operates, study the objectives, study the end, study all the relevant documentation, all rules and orientation, so that you know that this organization is geared to achieve a certain objective. And understand it and say, I think in terms of the literature that I've read and the operations that are there, I think that I will be comfortable in playing my role in this fashion. Because if you find people just taking positions for the sake of taking positions to enhance their curriculum design, at the end of the year, when you ask them what have you achieved, you find that that person did not achieve anything except to carry a license from the organization. Thank you.
As you have indicated, LDGA has been existing for a long time. Now, if you have read the Act, as you have indicated, you could see that the preamble of the Act is covering quite a noble idea on what must be achieved. Now, what I don't find on what you are saying, addressing that, is the issue of saying, we must subject those noble ideas to goodwill of people who can be able to fund the project. Because you see, that's what I'm reading from what they're saying. Because MDA has been there, the funding model is there in terms of the same media contribution to MDA. But now your emphasis, you are saying, must set up go down because there are people who can be able to fund some of the projects. But because of the lack of publicity from MDA, people are not. I'm saying, if you read the Act, are these normal ideas supposed to be subjected to goodwill? Are we going to achieve these normal ideas? Because you see, what we are saying is to continuously subject the normal ideas to the goodwill of those who can be able to lend a hand and contribute and so on. What's your comment around that particular?
Well, that is actually a challenge, and the good rule part of it is that there has to be a commitment from all sectors that are involved. I mean, the government is involved, the Department of Communication is involved, and other things are involved. Then how do we then expand the stakeholders, and make sure that maybe we rope in the international community to assist in the funding. And how do you then, within the MDA, make sure that you've got people who have got fundraising skills, who will be able to have projects that are there and that have been approved so that they are able to be funded. The good way part of it, I don't think we must reject it, but it does not necessarily mean we must subject ourselves to that. But the board members for sure they will identify someone with a fundraising scheme to make sure that he positions this structure into the international community for participation into the funding mainstream.
Member,
Mr.
Chairman, I don't don't see any hand. That will mean, Mr. Mahfouba, that you are at the end of our interview.
Thank you very
much. We are grateful that you have accepted the nomination.
Yes.
To come and appear before us. All what I can say is to wish you good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you,
member. Member, that was the last. Potential candidates to the interview for the team. We got some issues which we need just to deal with for 5 minutes or so. The one issue is that as we conclude this interview, tomorrow at 12 to 1, the committee is supposed to meet and finalize the training. Need to finalize tomorrow so that it can go through these processes so that then the report is submitted to the House. Now, what we have not done, we have not put a task in meeting. We should try to consolidate the name before that. So, from where I am, I wanted to suggest or to recommend that the at least the task team meet at 9 tomorrow. So that we look in terms of the consolidation of the name. So that when we go to the portfolio committee at 12, we are at least clear the area of convergence and where we are different and so on. So that we are able to deal with those because we don't have any other time. We have to finalize that tomorrow. Agree or not agree, but we have to deal with that particular matter tomorrow. So that it goes the normal processes of administration to find itself in the ATC and also in the House for Thursday, for the report to be in the House. That's one issue that I wanted to raise so that we are able to deal with it.
Yes,
sorry,
Chair.
Yes.
Chair, I first to see why we can't get the names together now. I mean, things are fresh in people's memories, so just interview these people.
If parties are comfortable, I just know that other parties they consult and so on. But if parties are comfortable that we can deal with those names now, we can be guided by the party. Follow
the rule. I think, you know, it is easy for us to come up with names here. But if you want to do justice to the names that we are going to be forwarding, I think concentration is the best thing. Therefore, I would recommend that every party can consult with their members, respective members, and then come back. But, oh, you're disturbing me, please.
What's disturbing you?
Yes.
It's honorable, Michael.
Yeah. And no, it's not about me. And that is the reason why, in your first recommendation, you are saying the task team will deal with it. It will be names that come out from the consultation of the different parties. And then, as the task team, you come back and put those names together. And if those names, we have common understanding on the name, it's fine. I think you will have dealt with it then more proficiently.
Honorable Michael?
Chair, you know, with all due respect, the last time you called for a task team meeting in which I was involved, class was 20 minutes late. Yourself, me, and Reverend Rondell were the only people present. It took us exactly 3.5 minutes to decide on the name because we were all in agreement in any effect. And, Chair, I think that we must appreciate that, you know, there are people in this committee who sit on national structures of parties and simply cannot be told at 5:15 in the afternoon that now there's going to be a meeting at 9 o'clock the next morning when it wasn't planned in the first place and the meeting it was always scheduled for 12 o'clock. That now means that people have to go and completely change the schedule. And, Chair, I fail to see why, if the party, that's fine. You want to consult, please, by all means, go ahead and consult. But I cannot understand why we now have to meet at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning and disturb everyone that has planned before 12. Because we did plan according to schedules that they were given, and we were not told about a task to meeting at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
I'll ask that question, the time and so on. We didn't say in the time we're going to flat.
Obviously, the task team idea is a concept that was created in this committee to try and facilitate consultation. But there is a feeling that it's inappropriate in this case because of other reasons. Then, you know, the only thing that's open to us is to come here and 12 o'clock tomorrow and then try and find each other. Not ideal, but we've created this mechanism exactly to consult with the opposition, not to consult with ourselves. But there is a feeling that unfortunately, this case has come right at the end of the year. We have to vote before Thursday, because Thursday this matter comes up in the House. So it's an unfortunate event. But if the opposition feels they don't want to meet, that's fine. We'll just come on Thursday or tomorrow at 12 and see if we can find each other. We don't want to impose anything untoward on anyone. I think let's just leave it like that and we'll come here at 12 tomorrow and try and see if we can sort it out.
Chair, just on a point of information. On a point of clarity. Honourable the Lamb, must please not understand me correctly. We are all for consultation. The problem arises. And Honourable Delaney, you weren't there for the last task team meeting. Well, the purpose of the task team was completely lost because three people arrived there. You know what I'm saying? And I for one, would have enjoyed it had Honourable Delaney been there, Masoli been there, because that's what I understood the task team was. But in actual fact, it was necessary because all the names that we had were similar in any event. There was one name that differed between us. So what I'm saying is, I don't think that it's necessary to have a special task team at 9. If we're going to be meeting at 12, then let's meet at 11:30 as a little task team. Come together, see if we can find each other, and then make it easier there.
Mamaru. So I think I'll compare with Honorable Mamaru. Yeah, we thought we have agreed on this for nearly consulting 5. But if people think that it's not working, maybe you can meet at that time at 12 o'clock. But what transpired last time and how you saw the task team maybe to be a futile exercise, I don't think it happens always on a reference number. In some instances, you'll find that you need that task team, you know? Yes. But if there is no concern about this, just meet at 12. It's fine. I don't think it's a problem.
No, thanks very much, Member. Maybe what we can do is that those parties who are ready, who will be ready with their names, they can forward their names. Because I think the problem last time was that we have a common name. That's why the task team was being refused. And so if we were not meeting, we are going to meet at around the past level, as you are indicating. It will be better that these parties can start with their names. I know from the AAC that we have to consult and so on. So if we can get the names, it might be as well that it might be common names, so that when we meet at that time, we know exactly where we differ and so on. Thank you very much, member, for your questions. We were just supposed to be done for a day, but we must just highlight that Dr. Samarabi from Adin could not attend the interview. Instead of 10 people, we had 9 due to the family death at home. But due to the nature and the urgency of the issue, there is little we can do to accommodate him like we do some other times and so on. I just wanted to put that in there, because otherwise, thank you very much for the session.